Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Perspectives on the Bible. This is Pastor Fred, a special episode today. I'm just going to give a little personal reflection on the day when Whitney Houston was buried. I just want to say, you know, I am sad. Because, you know, great people have been lost to us, and I'd like to start off with many years ago, probably 20 years ago now, at least, when my children came in and said to me, "Dad, Elvis Presley is dead." And I remember I just said to them, you know, "Elvis Presley is dead. How could Elvis Presley be dead? He's a young man." Now, I had recently watched his comeback performance. He is quite heavy, fat, as a matter of fact, and not the swell, the good-looking, handsome, a sexy young man that performed in Vegas or in a leather suit when he came back from the army, but the man who obviously had gotten out of control and gained a lot of weight and taken a lot of drugs and drank a lot of booze and got dissolute in his life, and now he was going to try to make a comeback. And now here he was, day after that performance, the day after the broadcast of that performance, when it was announced that Elvis Presley was dead. And the information came out, you know, about what his life was like, what happened to him with, you know, his people who were hangers on, the associations, the people he was with, the way in which he conducted his life, and the really sad way in which he used his talents and abilities during those years in between, you know, when he hit the big stage in Vegas and he made the big contracts, and then suddenly Elvis Presley became, I don't know, he disappeared. Remember that? Some of you are old enough to remember that. And we didn't give terribly much thought to Elvis Presley. Every so often he produced a new song and made a movie, and then he just went into oblivion. And suddenly Elvis Presley was back on the scene. I remember turning on the television and saying, "My goodness sakes, whatever happened to Elvis Presley?" I was so shocked. But I must confess, I never gave thought to Elvis Presley during those years when he was in getting in this situation. I didn't think about what he was doing with his life, where he was going, what he was drinking, what drugs he was taking, where he was visiting or wasn't visiting, what friends he was keeping. He wasn't a member of my family. He was a superstar, as they're called in Hollywood. They like to call him that kind of stuff. And, you know, and I didn't, you know, I enjoyed Elvis Presley. I was a big fan of Elvis Presley, and I still am a big fan of Elvis Presley. And when it happened, I wondered to myself, what a sad thing it is to see the condition that he was in before he died at such a young age. So much talent, so much ability, so much beauty. He was a very handsome man, you remember that. And a great singer, great performer, the beginner of a whole genre of music, for goodness sakes. He had so many Elvis impersonators after he died and so on and so forth. We all know that story, but I'd like to just spend a moment and think about, you know, what does that have to say about us? You know, we have friends that we haven't thought about. We have people that we haven't called in a while. We have people that we haven't written a letter to. This Christmas, for instance, I mean, how many of us didn't send out Christmas cards to let other people know how we were doing? And how many of us who didn't receive Christmas cards from those whom we normally receive Christmas cards, how many of us took the time to ask the question, "I wonder why?" Or do we just accept the fact that, you know, well, they didn't care to send us a Christmas card this year? That very, very significant problem of communications. And I'm disturbed by that. And then the second person I think about when you think about people like is Michael Jackson. Now, here's another man. When they said Michael Jackson is dead, I said, "Michael Jackson can't be dead. How can Michael Jackson be dead? Michael Jackson's a superstar. Michael Jackson's a young man." What was he? Was he 50? I guess he was 50. Michael Jackson is a great, enormous talent, ability. He's going to make a world tour. He's going to visit 200 concerts. He's going to visit 25 countries. How can Michael Jackson be dead? He has these two lovely children he adopted and all of that. And then it came to fore that he was dead. And we learned about the situation, you know, what kind of life he was living. He couldn't sleep. He had a doctor who gave him drugs that he shouldn't have been giving him. He was a demanding person in terms of the way he wanted to be treated. And he was mistreated, misunderstood, hiding away in Neverland, and all of that kind of stuff. And you think to yourself, gee whiz, you know. But I have to honestly see, other than the times when Michael Jackson would be in the news, or maybe he would be being attacked for some oddball reason, or there was a new investigation, or whatever was going on with Michael Jackson in those times, in between those times, I, as a very, very big fan of Michael Jackson, I didn't think of Michael Jackson. He wasn't part of my family structure. I didn't think of him on a daily basis. I didn't wake up in the morning and wonder how Michael is doing today. Michael Jackson was a superstar who was an entertainer in my life, and I felt friendly toward him, and I would have loved to have him as a friend and a neighbor and someone I could look into. But, you know, Michael Jackson was way above me. Way above me. He was a multimillionaire. He lived on a big, gigantic estate. He had guards and bodyguards. He was inapproachable. You couldn't get to him. You didn't just walk up to Neverland and say, I want to see Michael Jackson, and get in the door and then sit down with him and have a cup of coffee. That wasn't something you did. You didn't call him on the phone and say, hey, Mike, let's go out and have a beer. You know, that wasn't something you did with Michael Jackson. That wasn't the situation, as it isn't with most of the people in his context of life. And then we find out, you know, what was it like? What was it like? He didn't, there were things he didn't like about himself. He was constantly having plastic surgery. He was he didn't like his looks. He didn't like his background. He didn't like his situation in life. He wanted to change himself into something that he wasn't. He wanted to be he wanted to have so many things that he couldn't have. And then he found ways to have some of them. He had children, and that made him happy, and that was a good thing. And he was able to entertain, and that made him happy, and that was a good thing, although he worked very, very hard. But he was misunderstood. And I remember seeing interviews of Michael Jackson, how he said, I'm misunderstood. People don't understand me. And many people didn't understand him. And then the day came when it was announced that Michael Jackson was dead, and you think, wow, my goodness. And then he died in a drug-induced, by a doctor, but a drug-induced coma, actually, because he has to perform, he has to do things, and he can't sleep. And the poor fellow is given this drug and eventually dies from taking it too often or taking too much or not having, whatever the reasons that the jury found out about concerning his death. But, you know, once again, you know, how could we have possibly helped Elvis Presley? How could we have possibly helped Michael Jackson? I mean, we were his fans and their fans, and we bought their albums, we bought their records, we went to their concerts, we watched them on television, we enjoyed their company in terms of, you know, CDs and all that. But, you know, we were not involved in their lives, and they were not involved in our lives. And that comes to the big fall when you deal with Whitney Houston's death. I mean, the other day when I got home from an appointment and my wife and I were sitting in front of the computer, I turned on the computer and said, Whitney Houston is dead. I said to my wife, my goodness, Whitney Houston is dead. And we were just absolutely shocked. I had a Twitter and I went on and tweeted my shock and chagrin and sadness over the loss of such a magnificent singer with a voice that comes once in a generation. You know, this is a personality, this is a voice, this is an ability, this is a talent, this is a God-given gift that doesn't come down the street every day. And here she dies just before the Grammys and in difficult circumstances, you know. And you wonder to yourself, well, how does it happen? How could we have helped Whitney Houston? Now, maybe she wouldn't have let us help her. Maybe she was a person. I was watching The Bodyguard, the movie that she made with Kevin Costner about, you know, and that she wouldn't let the bodyguard help her. She wasn't interested in being helped. She didn't understand her need to be helped. And you know, people like Whitney Houston, Elvis Presley, and Michael Jackson, I mean, there are millions and tens of millions of people out there who want a bit of them, a piece of them, a touch them, Whitney Houston and Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson don't have millions and millions of minutes to give away. They don't have, if they gave away all of that, they would give away their entire lives. And that leads me to the way I posed the topic tonight. Did they give us so much of themselves that they didn't have anything of themselves or very little of themselves left to keep. And I think this is one of the things that we should reflect on, especially if you're a producer or a director or a movie person or anybody involved in the entertainment industry. And I know this is just maybe saying the obvious, but you can't give it all. You can't give it all. You have to have some left over for yourself. It's in the corporate world and in your own life. You, if you give everything you have to your children, then there's nothing left to for you. If you give everything you have to your spouse, there's nothing left for you. If you give everything you have to your work or to your corporation or to your profession or to your fans, we have to keep some of it back. We have to. It's hard to do because, you know, when you love Whitney Houston, Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson, others who have had the situation, they love what they did so much. They lived to do it. They loved to do it. And, you know, I think about it when you look at and just wonder about your own life. You know, I happen to be a preacher, so I have audiences and all different situations I might be in. But, you know, sometimes you have a very big audience and you have a very big event and you have a very successful retreat and you have, you're up on a high and you're in a cloud and you come home. And I have a wife and family and children and all that. But, you know, you come home and the adulation is gone and the cheering is gone and the light bulbs are gone and the shouting is gone and the people wanting to talk to you is gone and the exaltation and all of that excitement is gone. And you say, oh, I'm exhausted and it's a good thing I need some rest. But, you know, the second and third and fourth and sixth and tenth day afterwards, you long for that. You long for that. You say, well, when's the next retreat, or when's the next worship service, or when's the next performance, or when the next concert, or when's the next movie, because you miss it. You miss that. And if you don't have any reserve, or if you don't have a group of friends, or if you don't allow people, or maybe something else. And I think of Elvis Presley and the kind of people that they said were hanging around with Elvis Presley, all the wrong people, hangers-on, users and takers people who were sucking the lifeblood out of Elvis Presley, people who were sycophants, people who would do whatever he wants them to do in order to stick around with him, you know. They didn't have his best interests at heart. And these kind of people are just there for the ride. They're just there for the good times. And when the bad times come, they run away. And you think of Michael Jackson, you know. I mean, I don't really know who might have been hanging around with Michael Jackson because I don't think he had too many people who got inside of his world. It seems to me that Michael Jackson lived a relatively lonely life. And but, you know, maybe he didn't want anybody in, or maybe he was afraid, or maybe he had been hurt, or maybe he was fragile personality, or maybe he was worried that people might take advantage of him or misunderstand him or whatever the feelings are. And then Whitney Houston, you know, who were the hangers-on in her life? Who were the people who, you know, were involved with her? And was she strong enough? Did she have enough internal, did she have enough left of herself to defend herself against those who would misuse her? It's always a problem, you know, a problem with famous people. And it can happen to anybody. It can happen in your own personal life, in friendships. You know, I'm a parent, and if you're a parent, you may, even if you just had parents, and most of us did have parents, we remember that our parents used to be worried about our associations. Who do we hang out with? Bad friends that lead to bad morals, you know, and bad friends and bad morals lead to criminal behavior and the like. How worried I was when my children would be hanging around with other people who might be on drugs or with other people who might be on alcohol or other people who might drive a car when they were under the influence of alcohol or other people who might in some way affect my children's behavior patterns so as to make them fail at their schoolwork or make them get involved. I remember one time reflecting myself, I used to live in New York City on the Hudson River. And as a young boy, we used to swim in the Hudson River, and there was a place called the Cut. It was a rock, and you would jump off the cut into the Hudson River. But the one portion of it had a jagged rock that would stick out, and it stuck out in the low tide. You could see the jagged rock, but in the high tide, if you didn't know where the jagged rock was, there was a good possibility that you could jump off this rock from the shore and smack and kill yourself on that jagged rock, because you would crush your body against the rock as you struck it from 20 feet above in the air. We used to jump off 10 or 15 feet rock into the Hudson River. Now, jumping into the Hudson River was bad enough because a lot of undercurrent and undertow and the like going. It's not a very clean river, also disease and ridden. But, you know, there were people who would challenge you and say, well, you know, just jump off here. You won't get the rock. And I would say, no, I know where the rock is. We're too close. We're too close. No, no, don't worry about it. What are you, a sissy? What are you, a fag? What are you, you know, all that kind of talk. And I say, I don't care. I'm not jumping off over there. I'm going to the other side of the rock because it's high tide now. And, well, that's not exciting. That's not dynamic. That's not wonderful. That's not thrilling. That's not daring enough. And fortunately, I had presence of mind not to. One young boy of my acquaintances, I didn't really know the fellow, actually, jumped and he hit the rock. And fortunately, he just broke his leg. Now, he could have drowned, but we were there, and we got him out, and there was a terrible amount of pain involved. And fortunately, there wasn't any artery severed. There wasn't a terrible amount of blood, although there was infection later on. And the break wasn't so bad. I think he just grazed the rock, so to speak. But if he had hit the rock directly, he probably would have broken his leg, severed his artery, and bled to death. So it doesn't even have to be, you know, evil people that you're hanging out with, but careless people or people who care less about you, or just people who think it's so exciting. I do a lot of counseling, and I've had people tell me, if I could have only known then what I know now. How often we say that, if I could have only known then what I know now. Well, what does it tell us? I don't want to make this a long program. I want to pay tribute to these great people, but I also want to learn from them. You know, we hear a lot of talk, and I know that Bill O'Reilly got himself in a little trouble the other day for saying that we don't want to use Whitney Houston or Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley as role models. And I understand what he was coming from. He's saying, listen, Elvis Presley, in effect, killed himself. He didn't want to kill himself. He didn't want to commit suicide. But by the taking of drugs and by the taking of alcohol and by dissolute living and by hanging around with all these hangers-on who were misusing him and not looking after his best interests, and by being weak-willed and weak-minded, Elvis Presley, in effect, kills himself. And, you know, so he isn't a role model. The role model part of Elvis Presley or of Michael Jackson or of Whitney Houston or any others is that they went from nobody to somebody, but everybody is a somebody, you know that. But, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. So they went from not famous to famous, from not worldwide known to worldwide known, from not being a superstar to being a superstar, if you want to use that terminology. But in the process, it seems that they lost themselves, that they lost, there wasn't enough of them left, enough of themselves left to see them through the long haul, to see them through the long term, to see them through aging. They all grew older, and not terribly older, but old enough in the 40s and 50s to say, you know, and they were overwhelmed by that and overcome by that. And did they have people around them who didn't tell them to, you know, get a facelift and a body tuck and all that? Did they say, no, you're just growing older. You have to accept that. Did they have people around them who would just say, listen, aging is normal. So go ahead and have the facelift. Go ahead and have the body tuck. But don't be overwhelmed by your age. Did they have people around them and said, listen, you're growing older, but you're growing wiser. Invest your money better than you are. Red Skelton had people around him all the time who were always investing his money in every weirdo scheme, so that Red Skelton fundamentally died. He went through several fortunes in his lifetime. And I think he died relatively not rich because he trusted all of the wrong people, and all of the people he should have trusted, he didn't trust. So what does that say to us? I think it says to us a couple of things. One is, you know, let's take that card, the Christmas card illustration. I'm talking to myself as I'm much talking to you. If you send out Christmas cards to 50 people, and 50 people normally send you back Christmas cards, and you notice this year that only 25 of those people sent you Christmas cards, then maybe you need to call them. Maybe you need to write them another note. Maybe you need to find out why did they not send you a Christmas card. And if it's just because they didn't want to spend the stamp, or they didn't have time, or they were busy, well, I'm sure they'll appreciate that you called and asked how they are doing. Because that's one of the ways we keep together. Send them an email. Shoot them an email if they have that. And say, how are you doing? What's going on? How are things? If you have friends and acquaintances who will allow you to call them, and that's a big issue, then call them up if you haven't seen them in a while. This is Whitney Houston's death. If one thing it does, it reminds us to check in with those people with whom we can check in, the people who allow us to check in. And if you have other people in your life who don't really like you to involve yourself with them, who don't want you to check up on them, well, you know, once a year isn't such a terrible intrusion. And at least you'll know that you tried. If they don't answer your call, or they don't answer your card, or they don't answer your letter, or they refuse to answer your email, then they don't answer it. You know, what are you going to do? Give it a couple of tries. Give it a little bit of time. Try again. And if they don't answer, then they don't want you to be involved in their lives. Because one of the issues, you know, I have to ask in terms of Elvis, and in terms of Michael Jackson, and in terms of Whitney Houston, is would they have let you or I, if we were their friends or relatives or acquaintances, would they have let us help them, or would they have turned us aside and said, I don't need your help and I don't want your help? And not everybody is a superhuman person who can break through all of that and take a bullet for the other person, you know? That's not something that most of us can do. But it does say to us that, you know, caring about each other, loving each other, willingly taking the risk for each other, getting out there and risking rejection. That's why. Why don't we check up on the people who didn't send us a Christmas card when they always had sent us a Christmas card in the past? Because we feel rejected, and we don't want to be further rejected, because rejection is hurtful. It hurts us, painful. Or why don't we call people and visit with people and knock on people's doors who we haven't seen in a long while? Because we feel that they ignored us, that means they don't want us. And we don't want to risk having the door slammed in our face, or the phone unanswered, or the mail unresponded to. Why don't we interject ourselves into the lives of people who are having a difficult time with really big problems? Because we don't want the struggle or the nastiness or the conflict, you know. I think people basically avoid conflict. And so if the person that we want to help is in big conflict and they're going to yell at us and scream at us and tell us off and kick us out, then we might not want to risk that, because we ourselves are not strong enough to do it. Now, what does the Christian church say? Well, if you can't do it yourself, then take somebody with you. Bring another friend with you. Go by twos to the other person. And then if you can't do it with two, take three. Try to get the group, the whole group of friends involved to help the person who may be in need. Now, I don't know what caused Whitney Houston's death. Nobody knows at this particular time. But, you know, we do know that she had struggles in life. And she had situations where people were not acting in her own interest. They were acting in their own interest and probably misusing her and even abusing her. I think that was also true of Michael Jackson. I think that was also true of Elvis Presley. And it's very, very sad, because I feel sad for them that their lives were so early ended, maybe much more tumult in their life than should have been the case. And I also feel sorry for the world, because each one of them made a very, very big and positive and dynamic contribution to the world, which they could have continued to do if they could have found the right associations, the right friendships. Now, I'm a pastor of a church, and I believe that going to church and being in church and finding the right church and associating yourself with that church is an important part of healthiness. You know, like I said, it's not only you and I reaching out to befriend and to be with the other person. It's also you and I allowing the other person to help us. And so Whitney Houston and people like herself and Michael Jackson, people like himself, and Elvis Presley and people like himself have to be willing to allow other people to help them. It's really a dynamic that has to work. It's not that I wait for them to ask me, and it's not necessarily only that they wait for me to ask how they're doing, but that both people, before these things happen, and I'm talking to you in this program, before these things happen, have to reach out toward each other. But if there's an imbalance, then the one who's stronger and the one who's healthier, of course, reaches out and barges in and tries to say, what can I do to help you? And please let me. I've asked people, I've even begged people to let me help them. And sometimes they have, and it's worked out okay. And sometimes they have not, and it hasn't worked out okay. But, you know, one way or the other, we're in it together, and we have to help each other. And it doesn't always have to be long-term. I think that's another factor that comes in. People say, well, I'd like to help, but I don't want to get involved because it's going to take too much time. Well, that's when group interaction helps. Isn't that so? That, you know, if you feel that you have a friend or a relative or a family member or someone who needs help or needs friendship or needs companionship or just needs encouragement or needs support or what, it doesn't always have to be a crisis. It can just be help and friendship and camaraderie and collaboration and cooperation and all that good stuff, and you don't feel that you can give that much time, then talk to other people who know this friend or relation or family member and say, let's do it together. Let's do it together. I can't do it myself, but there's obviously a need, so let's, you do this much and I'll do this much and you do this much, and then we'll all work it out and schedule it together so that we can all work together to help the individual who in that particular case is in need. And then once their need is answered, involve them and include them and invite them to be helpers themselves. Because one of the best ways to, and AA is a very good example of that, among others, but AA is probably the best example of that. Christian church has been an example of that from the beginning of the Christian church. Sinners help sinners. The needy help the needy. The believers help the believers. The people who have fallen the most help those who are falling. And one of the things is that people today need to be involved in church. The wonderful part of Whitney Houston's death is that she had this wonderful church service, dignified, Christian, beautiful, dynamic witnessing. And as one of them said, for these 4 hours, Whitney has brought America back to church. Yes, thank you, Jesus. Praise the Lord. What a testimony that is. For these 4 hours, and for the last day or two, and maybe even tomorrow as well when she is interred in the cemetery, for that amount of time, Whitney brought America back to church, where that she was breathing with us. She's with us in spirit. She's with us in Jesus. She's with us in that she rests in the bosom of the Father. She's with us insofar as she's in the Father's house, the house to which you and I in our turn will go when our time comes. And we shall yet see her again, even face to face, and hear her voice sing magnificent songs to God, I'm sure, in heaven. But we're bereft of her, so it's our loss now. But we need to get back to church. We need the community of church. We need to, not only because we need the church for ourselves, but we need to give over to the church. I know I have a lot of, over the years, I've had many old people And you know how it is. Churches are made up of old people, and people say everybody in church is white-haired. But every year in my confirmation class, I say to them, listen, kids, you're 15, 14 years old. Did you ever think that old people need you? And they say, what do you mean? They don't need me. They got their lives. They got their cars. They got their house. They got their money. They're 50 and 60 and 80 years old. They got their children and their grandchildren. What do they need me for? I tell my confirmation classes, they need to see you in church because you're going to, well, I don't like to go to church. I don't want to go to church. I don't get anything out of church. Church doesn't do anything for me. Church doesn't give me anything. And I say, well, what do you give? Well, there you go, ask for money. No, I'm not asking for money. What do you give? Do you think maybe that 85-year-old man just seeing you in church, just seeing you come into church, just seeing your young face and your young self sitting down and just hearing your young voice, do you think that maybe that makes that 85-year-old man feel good, feel accepted? Do you think that when old people go to church and all they see in church is old people, do you think that maybe those old people feel that they are rejected by the young people? Do you think that they're being ostracized by the young people? Do you think that maybe they think that the young people don't like them, don't want them, and that the young people reject them and their values and their church? Well, they say, but that's my grandfather you're talking about. I say, I know it's your grandfather I'm talking about or your grandmother I'm talking about. So why aren't you in church to support and help and encourage and love and embrace and affirm your grandparents? Well, but church doesn't do anything for me. I said, forget about the do anything for me business. How about you doing something for somebody else? Well, what can I do? I said, go to church. Well, what is that? I said, that's the simplicity of it. Just go to church. And your very existence, your very presence, your very being there, maybe with a smile on your face. I've said to younger children, do you ever talk to older people? They say, no, they're like my grandfather. I don't want to talk to them. I don't know them. They're old. They're crotchety. They're not friendly. I said, do you ever think that they feel the same way about you? Oh, what do you mean? I said, you know, when old people say to me that kids are rude or kids are nasty or kids are noisy or kids are out of place or kids are unruly, do you know what they're really saying? And my confirmation classes say to me, no, what are they really saying? And they give me that challenge. Yeah, no, what are they really saying? And I say to them, what they're really saying is that the children don't like us. They don't talk to us. They don't have conversation with us. They don't befriend us. They don't embrace us. They don't want us. Old people need young people. And you know what? Young people need old people. There is wisdom in age. There is wisdom in experience. Not everybody who has age is wise, and not everybody who has experience is wise, and not everybody has learned anything. There are some old people who are just old fools. But there are some who are not. Some who can give you a word of advice or give you a word of encouragement or listen to your story. Have you ever thought that maybe there's an older person who all the older person wants to do is listen to your story or vice versa? Maybe there's an older person in church and all they want out of life is for you to listen to their story and to listen to what they've experienced and to experience and to have them share with you what they've done. You know, I've been in many situations where the young people in my confirmation classes have taken me seriously, have gone to church, and I've seen them over at the coffee table, and they've been talking to an older person, and the older person is laughing, and they're laughing. And the older person comes back next week looking for them, and they're there. And they start talking to each other and maybe even sit in the same row, maybe not next to each other, not knee to knee, elbow to elbow, but eventually they look for each other's company. And when the older person is there, the younger person says, well, what happened? Why doesn't they come anymore? And I said, why don't you call them? I can't do that. I said, maybe they're sick. Maybe they're cold. Maybe they. And sometimes the young people did do that. And they came back and I said, what happened? And they said, you know, it wasn't they were sick. They were just afraid to come to church. And I said, and why were they afraid to come to church? And the young person told me, because he or she said to me, that they didn't want to come to church because they were afraid that I, the young person, wasn't going to be there. And they were afraid that, you know, because maybe the young person had been away a week or two or three, and the old person was despondent because the young person wasn't there. You see, friendship, camaraderie, communication, collaboration, cooperation, encouragement, we all need that. And where do you get that? In the bar? You get that yeah, you can. You get it at work. But one of the easiest and the best and the most wholesome places to get it is in the community of the local congregation, the local church. Go to church. Laugh with the people. Stick around. Share a little bit. Listen a little bit. Give a little bit. Don't worry about the money. Nobody's watching you when the plate goes by. Just go and give. And you'll find out that in giving is when you get. In giving is when you get. Okay, well, we talked quite a bit tonight. I'm not going to go on. I do want to pray for these three people. Elvis Presley, thank you, Jesus, for a great singer, a great artist, a pioneer in his time who gave much, much to the entertainment community and to the world. I want to thank you for Michael Jackson, a creative genius. A creative genius of great talent and great ability, who also set up a whole genre of music and contributed so much to the entertainment industry and to the world and gave so much of himself. And for Whitney Houston, a person of great talent and ability who gave of herself that we might hear her and know her and love her during our short companionship in this world. And I ask you that those who rest in the Lord would have light perpetual shine upon them. And may the souls of the faithful departed through the mercy of God rest in peace. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. I'm Pastor Fred. You've been listening to a special edition of Perspectives on the Bible, and I hope that you will be able to reach out. And if you need to have someone reach out to you, then give them a hint that maybe you need them. Because I think they'll be there for you. I really think they will. Good night and God bless.